It's time to hear what's good, what's bad, and what's ugly at the cinemas and on DVD. Get ready for...
Wait for it!
Film Sociology with WFYI's film guru.
Kaiser Shizzy!
No, that's Matthew Sosie.
It's such a fine line between stupid and clever. Yes.
Let's find out how thin the line is. Here's your host, Matthew Sosie.
There are rich teams, and there are poor teams. Then there's 50 feet of crap. And then there's us.
Hello there, film lovers. Welcome to Film Sociology, a film talk show here on WFYI HD To The Point and WFYI.org. If you have a question or a comment, you can email me at msocey, that's M-S-O-C-E-Y, at WFYI.org. Also on Twitter, also on Facebook, on Twitter, at Matthew Sosie. The show is available as a podcast. It's also available on iTunes, and we also have a blog, which you can check out at...
filmsociology.tumblr. That's T-U-M-B-L-R.
Tumblr.
Tumblr.
It's like when you say tourable is T-R-B-L.
Yeah. Tumblr.com.
If you're listening in Florida. yes. And, of course, you can read my looking back at the film year 1983 with some of the films that influenced me as a 13-year-old. The voice you heard. Man who loves Moneyball just as much as I do,
yep.
And his lovely wife's birthday is today. That's
right.
Kobe Slagle.
Hello.
Mr. Slagle.
Yes.
It's like Mr. Crawl. And we have a guest in studio.
Right,
first yep. off, I want to personally thank the IU Hoosiers, your Indiana University Hoosier basketball team.
What did we do?
You guys have an afternoon game. And if there's an afternoon game, then that means a certain somebody in Indianapolis radio cannot do his show. Therefore, he comes and hangs out here.
Why is there an afternoon game?
Why isn't there an afternoon game? It's college basketball, and you need it. Everybody's been snowed in. I braved I-70 to get here. It's fine. It's been fine. But we have a special guest, and, of course, he has his own intro. And you can figure out who it is immediately.
The blackest brother in the galaxy, Nubian God.
What's a Nubian?
Will someone shut that man up?
Never!
Never!
Ladies and gentlemen, the man that brings Chasing Amy and 1776 together, Abdul Kim Shabazz.
Not to mention Doctor Who.
And Doctor Why.
And Doctor... Whiskey,
careful.
Tango, Foxtrot.
Yeah, that's good. That's good. Great Wilco album. Is that a Wilco album? Anyway. And as if having Abdul in studio wasn't enough, a little later on in the show.
We might actually exceed the allotted...
We used to... That's the Blues House Party.
Okay.
No.
No, they're all dead.
No, we have... See, I'm going to be playing a bunch of new releases on the show tomorrow.
Because, oh, that means they are about to die of a drug overdose.
Yes.
I want my daddy's records.
Yeah, I'll give you your daddy's records. No, but a little later on in the show, you can hear an interview I conducted last week with Fred the Hammer Williamson, who is working on a Kickstart project. It's not just for Spike Lee anymore, but Fred was one of my very first interviews in this business, and it's good to have him on the show again. But yes, as somebody said, between Abdul and the Hammer, they're going to start calling me Travis.
Pretty much.
You know, because they don't know the show's names or anything like that, right? So anyway, how are you, sir?
Or you'll be... Like in every black sitcom, there's the white neighbor.
That's me.
So you'd be like Abe Vigoda.
Or the Willis, half of the Willis.
Yeah.
Why we got to be on the radio with the Willis?
Be Mr. Bentley.
Ooh, the height, I wouldn't mind that. So.
No, it's always good to be here and hang out with my friends at Film Sociology.
Because we haven't had you on because you've been doing,
radio,
you're doing
down
radio down the street.
Yeah.
So good to have you here.
Oh, good to be here. Yeah, great. It was kind of weird because of IU basketball and a couple other things. I was supposed to go to Illinois this weekend to go play lawyer, but the weather basically threw everything.
Is anything like playing doctor? Don't answer that.
Well,
yeah, a little prodding.
A little poking, a little prodding. And is this going to hurt? Not me.
That's right.
So I decided, like, yeah, I got the night off, so I'll just go ahead and hang out with my good friend, Mr. Sosi. Then you'll love this. I have to run down to the Columbia Club when I get done with you.
No.
And then do an interview with WVON Black Urban Radio in Chicago.
Great. Tell them about my show.
Oh.
The Dead Black People Show.
Oh, will do.
And if your dad's listening online, well, I should forward a link to him because he'll listen to you in Chicago. I don't know.
He'll listen to you, yeah.
All right, so.
He'll listen to his oldest son.
He's going to have two of his favorite
dad,
black guys
really
on.
Dad, you don't
his,
need to do
your,
that.
His son and Fred Williamson. You know what Elmore Leonard said? It's a real show.
It's terrific.
And speaking of real show, tonight, if you don't have any plans, and it's okay if you don't, it's January. This is part of my get out and do things in the dead of winter campaign. The IMA tonight is doing their winter film series. What?
Is that the official title of your campaign, or is that the
working
title?
Well, there's a working title, because okay. I can't really use the official title.
Get out of your parents' basement and live a little bit.
Or get off your monkey's tuchus and... And it's not
I ain't got to do that about the monkey. The monkey lives. You just said
so. Tonight at the IMA is part of their winter film series. They're showing Some Like It Hot, and so that's White Dudes in Drag. And
that's a Duran Duran. No, that's a Duran Duran song, right?
No.
No.
Power Station?
Power Station.
You played it.
With the former members of Duran Duran.
You played this in your radio days,
yes,
right?
Yes, I did.
Okay.
When it was an all-80s weekend right here at 101.5 WBNQ, the Twin Cities Choice.
Problem was it Twins or Willie Tyler?
No, it wasn't Minneapolis St. Paul.
No,
it was more like Bloomington Normal, Illinois.
Yeah, those are the short Twin Cities.
That's right.
Anyway, my daughter and my partner HW, we're going to be there tonight. If you see us and you come up to us and say, "Film Sociology, it's a real show. It's terrific." You will get a prize package, courtesy of WFYI.
Awesome.
Whatever's in the closet. So if you're listening online at WFYI.org, or you're listening, of course, on WFYI HD2, head over to the IMA tonight.
So what's in your closet?
I ain't telling you. So anyway, that is tonight. That's going to be a lot of fun. All right. We're going to go to what is new in theaters. Did you know, I guess they're making two films about Hercules. They're doing one with Dwayne Johnson that's coming out later this year. This
what's
is not...
That?
I don't know.
Hercules with a tan?
Maybe. them Samoan Hercules, you got to watch them.
What's the Hercules versus the Amazons? What was those 1950s series of Hercules movies?
And then I remember seeing the Lou Ferrigno 84 version of Hercules. That's...
Hercules. Hercules, can you hear me? Hercules.
Oh, you're a bad man.
Huh?
But there is there's a film out called The Legend of Hercules, shocked, not screened for press, with Killian Lutz, Scott Adkins, or Liam McIntyre. Or as Ed Johnson Hot wrote in Nuvo, not the one with The Rock, the one with the guy from Twilight. So there is that.
Mm. You want to play the werewolf?
No, I think that's Taylor Lautner. Your guy, Taylor Lautner.
Oh, yeah.
No, I think it's one of the secondary shirtless guys that was in Twilight. I don't know.
So the guy in Twilight?
See, if your wife was here, she would tell us who Hercules is.
I mean, Michael, his face? Who played?
No, not Michael Sheen.
Michael Sheen?
Now you're doing your game. This is the Abdul IMDb name game. You bring up Hustle and Flow with Terrence Howard, he's going to bring up General Zod. You bring up General Zod, he brings up Hustle and Flow. I know your radio trickery, sir.
Hey, it'll be 10 years in September.
God help us all. You're still waiting for you to embrace your roots.
Yeah, me too. Mate says the same thing.
And if somebody, of course, tells you on Facebook, Bill Reed, you don't see enough black cinema. So we're
yes,
gonna,
I do.
We're gonna
turn off the lights.
All right. So also opening in theaters, Emma and I are seeing this tomorrow. The Spike Jonze film Her, starring Joaquin Phoenix, the voice of Scarlett Johansson. Don't roll your eyes, Mr. Shabazz. You're
a man in love with his phone. Wow, Kirby, never seen that plot before, have you?
For those listening on radio, which is all of you, Abdul held up his phone close to him.
Oh yeah, a man attached to his phone, can't put it down, always messing with it. Oh no, what's next? Won't get off the internet?
Yes, well, that's, of course, you can read Ed Johnsonot's 5-star review of this in Nuvo. So that
he was talking
there.
About that last week.
I know, this was his top film of last year.
Of course, and you realize that. If it was an ethnic type of film.
Here it comes.
Can you just imagine what the phone would sound like? Well, you need to do this. You need to get over here. Blah, blah, blah. Where you been? Where you going? I'm going to go YB.
So if we take off Scarlett Johansson and put in Queen Latifah's voice, that's going to...
Dang!
We are up and flying. Okay.
Been a while since it has an old friend.
A little bit. So we might get the dead people we like. I don't know. We'll see.
In case anybody's wondering or cares, Kellan Lutz is Hercules.
And who is that? I sound like an old person. Who's that Kellan Lutz person? What else has he done?
The Immortals.
Oh, gosh. Was he in Twilight?
Yes, he was in Twilight.
What did he play in Twilight? So you can get a text from your wife.
Emmett Cullen.
Whatever.
There you go.
Brian, your father isn't Mr. Cohen. I never thought he was. Shut up!
We're not doing that. All right. Also in theaters today is, I'm gonna lob a grapefruit to Mr. Shabazz. There is the family drama, or dark comedy, I should say, August Osage County. This is with Meryl Streep, Julia Roberts, Delbert Mulroney.
Yeah, that's the one where they're like sitting around the table and they're always talking.
Sam Shepard, Juliette Lewis, Ewan McGregor, our guy from Oxford University,
Benedict Cumberbatch.
Chris Cooper. Now,
is that the guy who was in Pacific Rim?
Who, Benedict Cumberbatch?
Yeah.
No, he's the dragon.
Oh no, I'm getting confused with the other black British guy.
Benedict Cumberbatch isn't black.
I know, but you said British guy, you know.
Yes, he's Key and Peele.
Okay.
Idris Elba.
Yeah.
Mandela. So no. He's not in this play. That would be interesting if he were in this film.
Can you just imagine Nelson Mandela saying the apocalypse has been canceled?
I think he did, didn't
Yeah, pretty much.
No, this is based on the Pulitzer Prize winning play about a really dysfunctional family. So if you thought being snowed in with your family for a few days was bad. And the best way to describe it, now disclosure on this, I've never seen the play. I know the Phoenix did it, but the best way to describe this family is toxic. It's a toxic family, and it's everybody trying to figure out
what's Britney Spears cool toxic.
Not in a cool Britney Spears. If it is, it's shaved head beating people up with an umbrella. Britney Spears.
So,
yeah, not pretty. Not pretty. Thought the performances were pretty good. I know some folks considered the film shrill. I know a couple of folks. I think Lou Harry was one of those, but a couple of members of the IFJA not thrilled with it. But it is one of those. They're like, oh, yeah, my family's not so bad.
You see, when I saw the previews, I was sort of like, eh.
The problem I had, and it's funny
you've
bring
seen
that,
this before. This isn't
well, here's the thing:
new.
The trailers of the TV spots for this film are dead wrong. It is a much darker comedy than the. You know, I think they're treating it like the Family Stone or some Sarah Jessica Parker thing. And no, it's not a light, dysfunctional family.
Because that's definitely what the TV.
Yeah, this is dark in tone, dysfunctional family. So no, it is not. Yeah, that's gonna really rub. That's gonna really irritate a lot of people. And I'm just saying, I'm warning you.
I told you.
Don't
call me and get mad and complaining next week.
That's right. So
I tried to warn him. I said, "You go down there."
See. I always remember we had many moons ago, right before we moved into the new building, there was a horror film that was being financed here, and I think some of it was shot here, and it was a killer ghost Indian, and of course you said your role would be the wino that lives.
Yep, told him, don't go in there.
Nobody's gonna mess with him. Nobody's gonna believe him. Let him live.
That's right.
Told you not to mess with them Indians.
We ain't got no money.
So, anyway, if you are into families bickering that are not yours, but really solid performances by Julia Roberts and Chris Cooper, Streep, there's not a whole lot for her to do compared to her previous work, but she's probably going to get a nomination anyway. Mm. So, anyway, that is out there. You've been warned. Also out in theaters is the film Lone Survivor. This is the one with Mark Wahlberg, Ben Foster, Emile Hirsch, Taylor Kitsch, Eric Bana.
Now, is this back in theaters, or is this premiering in Indy now for the first time?
It is premiering now in Indy for the first time.
Okay, because you were pretty hot on it like a couple months ago.
Yeah, it did hit the big three.
Okay.
So I think it could qualify for awards. But it's based on the true story of Navy SEALs on operation in Afghanistan.
Oh, wait a minute. I'm thinking of... I'm thinking of the Robert Redford one.
Oh, All Is Lost.
All Is Lost.
No, this is a different survival tale. Mm. This is the year of survival, ladies and gentlemen. We had All Is Lost. We had Gravity. We had 12 Years a Slave. We have Lone Survivor. We have lots of survival stories, and this is one of them. And but this one's based on a true story, and Mark Wahlberg is, of course, a part of this. I think he's also the producer on this. And it's an operation that they wind up trying to do some surveillance.
Yeah,
and 200
they said
guns.
If we let one of these guys go, then another little Afghanis is going to show up.
Yeah, there's two aspects of the film that are really strong. One is that, is the debate. Is they do you let these guys go? Because if you do or you don't, there's 24-hour network news is just going to go bonkers over here in this, because now anything can get filmed onto a cell phone and shot out into the world. And then the second half of the film, I was talking with a friend who was in the military who's going to see this today, but it's probably the most claustrophobic war film I've seen since Black Hawk Down. Because it is basically four guys up against dozens, if not hundreds, of snipers. And you have
I've seen this movie. It's called Zulu.
Well, not that many. But you know, you have soldiers literally hurling themselves off cliffs to escape whenever possible. So it's very intense. It's directed by Peter Berg, who, of course, gave us really good films like Friday Night Lights. He also made Hancock. This is more in the Friday Night Lights vein.
Okay, is it more the first part of Hancock or the second part of Hancock? Because remember...
I'm not even going to compare it to Hancock, so okay. I'm just going to keep it over. But it's very solid filmmaking. It doesn't feel like a commercial for the military. I'm looking at you, Act of Valor. You get the... Here's something... Don't hire soldiers to act, and actors won't actually try to go to war. So, and we know there have been certain actors who've compared making movies to going to war.
But they're not.
And they're not here. So, but there's also the camaraderie between the soldiers. Wahlberg is strong as usual. Ben Foster's a guy, if you look at his IMDb page, I think he's, 33? Mm. And he's done everything from 6 Feet Under to Get Over It to doing kind of, teenage mindless movies in the 90s, and then to be able to do films like 310 to Yuma. He got an Oscar nomination for The Messenger, working with Woody Harrelson, and he's just picking his own material. Nice gray area as far as the character. He can be dark, he can be disturbing, and very, of course, with his fellow SEALs, very, very supportive. So really good military war picture, well worth checking out.
Okay. Like, so
it is intense. I don't know if the lovely Mrs. Shabazz would be up for a lot of camouflage shooting and jumping.
I almost had
to
pull her off the wall at whatchamacallit, not Zero Dark 30. the one where they're in Afghanistan and the guy pulls the mines out of the ground.
Hurt Locker.
Hurt Locker, yeah.
Ooh, yeah, yeah.
Hurt Locker, that was... My wife was like the guy walking on the wire between the skyscrapers, just on edge the whole...
Then I would wait on
that. Not
her
speed.
No, not her speed. So anyway, those are out in theaters right now. So Mr. Shabazz, what have you seen recently?
We saw American Hustle, mm-hmm. which
white folks be scheming.
Well, actually I liked it. It was funny. I mean, I thought they're gonna probably take like 10-15 minutes out of it.
Uh huh.
Because it just seemed a little slow in a couple of places. But overall, I thought it was funny. It was. Really good, and when Robert De Niro's character starts speaking Arabic to the...
Nice twist.
Yep.
Nice twist. Well,
Salaamu Alaikum.
I was like, uh-oh, he's not fooling around.
Yeah, no, I thought that was really good. I thought everybody, Amy Adams, who I'm still madly in love
with.
Yeah.
Careful, she might...
Not quite Halle Berry, but
text from
there.
The missus in three, two...
Kristen Bale did really, really good, and you get past him, being Batman.
Well, that's what he does, yeah. So... I know Ed Johnson makes fun of him for the opening scene where we see the big belly and the comb over.
Yeah.
But last night, Emma, HW, of course, has become a fan of Jennifer Lawrence and Amy Adams. And so she, because of, I'll tell you where I'm going. She has seen Doubt. She liked Doubt. And she likes Frosty the Snowman. But she, because of Hunger Games, she wound up watching Silver Linings Playbook and really liking it. So then the Socies, yes, this is family night out with the Socies. The three of us went to see American Hustle, which I had already seen, but my wife and daughter had not, and they really enjoyed that. Well, I showed Emma a couple of clips from the film The Fighter, which is what David L. Russell did a couple films back. And I showed her just the scenes with Amy Adams, and she liked it and wanted to watch all of it. And part of it is, Kobe, there was characters in that film that she thought lived down the street from the Real Housewives of South Boston.
Wow.
And she started watching it, and she didn't realize that that was Christian Bale was in.
Yeah.
You know, she's like, that's not to do with the comb over. Yes, honey, that's to do with the comb over, and
that's
he was
Bruce
Batman
Wayne.
Three times. And Newsies. That was her first introduction to Mr. Bale's work.
Wow. Now, I did debate, and I meant to ask you, this isn't a Dr. Soucy film therapist moment.
Oh, good, because the jacket's in the other room.
Yeah, no, we're good.
Yeah, good.
I was going to ask you about The Wolf of Wall Street.
Okay, Kobe.
Yeah. What good about it?
Good, bad, worth
I
it?
I really enjoyed it. It's 3 hours.
Okay, now... Is it 3 hours in a JFK kind of 3 hours, a Nixon where it's 3 hours but it feels like two?
I didn't feel.
Or is it three hours?
No, I didn't feel. I don't think the film dragged.
No.
I don't think it dragged at all. And part of it is Scorsese's kind of, you know, hits full throttle from the very beginning and doesn't
yep.
let up. It is not Scorsese's Wall Street.
Okay.
It goes beyond Oliver. And I'm talking about 80s. Crazed out of his gourd.
Greed, for lack of a better term,
right.
is good.
We're talking about bat-spit crazy 80s Oliver Stone, and I think Scorsese leaps far and above because
okay.
he shows the absurdity and the amount of money and resources and power that these guys had. You know, the very first scene involves throwing a dwarf.
Dwarf tossing.
For fun.
Yeah.
Yeah.
The old dwarf tossing back in the 80s.
This is white collar dwarf tossing. So.
You ever heard of that?
Yeah.
Colby, you never heard of dwarf tossing?
Nope.
No, it was actually back in the.
They didn't do that at IU? 87,
88, 89. That was kind of a big thing.
I would have been born one and two.
But see, but here's the thing. What you do is you would like, it was like the dwarf be like in Velcro.
The dwarf be like in Velcro.
And you throw the dwarf as far as you can to see if he could stick to the, it was dwarf tossing.
My apologies to the Spears family.
It's true. That's what we
yes,
did.
But the other thing with
how much Coke did your parents consume before you were born? Thank you.
Moving on.
Thanks. Yes, Mr. Shella.
Yeah, that's good. The film does have a storytelling style similar to Goodfellas
okay.
and Casino, but there is a little bit of a twist to it, so it doesn't feel like it's a rehash of those previous films. So I would say give it a shot. I don't know if Mrs. Shabazz would be up for it. And, of course, your lovely wife, Kobe,
yeah.
had the best response.
An hour into it, this is obnoxious.
Really? The opening scene with the dwarf tossing didn't give you
wasn't
a signal?
A
no, and the two scenes following there immediately thereafter?
Yeah,
no.
Which we can't really talk about. So, yeah. So, I would say go to that one solo.
Okay. Now, the other movie that I have no use for whatsoever, but it keeps showing up in preview after preview, is I, Frankenstein.
You know, that's released.
That's not out yet.
That's released in January for a reason.
Yeah.
Even
I mean,
though,
if I want to
even
see
Aaron, Tom Jane is
I want to see Aaron Eckhart look like that, I'll just go rent the second Batman film.
Half of it.
Yeah.
So,
see, this is why I love talking to you because this solves a multitude of.
This is good,
issues.
And it's not, and I don't have to be Dr. Soucy film therapist,
no.
So I'm glad to hear that.
But the Lego movie does seem interesting.
Oh, jeez. We'll talk about that when it comes in March.
Okay.
You know what, Kobe? Let's take a short break, and
all
we'll right. do we'll do a few DVD Blu-ray titles, and then we'll get to my chat with Fred the Hammer Williamson. You're listening to Film Sociology, a film talk show here on WFYI HD2 The Point and WFYI.org.
We'll be right back. any good? Sir?
What?
Are either one of these any good?
I don't watch movies.
Well, have you heard anything about either one of them?
I find it's best to stay out of other people's affairs. You know who I can do without? I can do without the people in the video store.
Which ones?
All of them.
What would you get for a 6-year-old boy who chronically wets his bed?
So do you have any new movies in?
Do you have that one with that guy who was in that movie that was out last year?
They never rent quality flicks. They always pick the most intellectually devoid movie on the racks.
Ooh, Navy SEALs!
It's like in order to join, they have to have an IQ less than their shoe size.
Just go open the video store.
Yeah, open the video store.
Blockbuster Video! Wow, what a difference!
Well, in case you didn't see it, here it is again.
Welcome back to Film Sociology, a film talk show here on WFYI HD2 The Point and WFYI.org. If you have a question or a comment, like why, go to WFYI.org. Also on Facebook, also on Twitter, at Matthew Sosie. Hanging out with Abdul-Hakim Shabazz.
It is so nice to be here. I've missed you, old friend.
I've missed you, too. Are you working on your grocery list over there?
No, I am. As you know, part of my day job is that little political website called IndiePolitics.org.
And what are you doing to irritate the masses today?
Well, actually, I'm working on a story next Tuesday as the governor's State of the State address.
Ah.
So we caught up with him today at the State House. We asked him a few questions about what he was going to talk about. So just putting a couple of things up on the website now so I can drink later and don't have to get up as early tomorrow.
Very good. Well, that's, you know what? We all strive for that, really.
Hey, we're efficient around here.
That's exactly what that is.
Yeah, and the nice thing is I get to hang out with my good friend, Mr. Sosie, who I, because of my other job I'm actually taking the night off of, I don't get to hear his program as much as I would love to. I have to listen to the Film Sociology podcast.
Which you can check out at?
WFYI.org.
That's right.
Oh, boy, look at that. All right.
I'm just waiting for you to get the Indiana Week in Review crew in here and do
a film discussion. Oh, my gosh. Yeah, we got to work on that. Well, as soon as I get Jolene in, then that means John gets to come back. And if I get John back in, then we got to get Jim and rest of the crew. And we need an underwriter for that, but I won't say which one it is. Also out on new on DVD and Blu-ray this week, got a couple of pictures. One is called Runner Runner, which was the one with Justin Timberlake, Ben Affleck, and Gemma Arterton.
That?
You know, the film works if you've never, ever seen Wall Street, Two for the Money,
a real
Spanish
film?
Prisoner, you know, the Recruit, something where you have a young up-and-comer who's taken under the wing by somebody with experience in some, in this case, it's online gambling overseas, outside the U.S.
Yeah, and then eventually the FBI catches him and uses him
as a
mole.
Guess what? Things are not as they appear.
Wow.
No, come on.
Really? And FBI agent Anthony Mackie. Serious stuff. So, yeah, if you've never seen any of those pictures, you will like this. That's about it. Also out.
And that little boy grew up to be Charles Manson. Only now you know the rest of the story.
He's not on this station.
Or any other for that.
Also
matter.
On DVD and Blu-ray this week is a documentary we've talked about on the show last week, The Act of Killing. This was winner of Best Documentary at the IFJA. And basically reenactment, interview profiles on assassins in Indonesia from the mid-60s who are still around, still treated like rock stars in their native country, and they've act out some of the genocide that they became famous for 40 years ago.
Wow.
Yes.
You know, that downtown Jakarta is just a swinging village.
Yep, they just needed Zebs. Kobe, this is another piece of the film sociology marital advice. If you see this film, don't end the night with it.
Yeah.
Yeah, this is something, watch Bob's Burgers or something before going to sleep. Yeah, cleanse the palate on that one, so... Got a couple of old titles worth checking out. It's funny, because one of the unofficial rules when Abdul and I do radio together is when in doubt, quote Monty Python or Richard Pryor until you can't. And new on Blu-ray, I think finally is making its Blu-ray debut, Monty Python's The Meaning of Life. The last film they did together.
Come for your liver, sir.
Yes.
Oh, your liver.
And this was a compilation of small films.
Don't stand there, Gorgon, like you've never seen the end of God before.
Some, you know, some are obviously better than others. We all, of course, from the meaning of life, Abdul and I and Kobe have found out how we want to end our lives.
That's right.
Being chased. So anyway, that is out.
What about the hedge?
The Grim Reaper. The final cut of the original 1973 film, The Wicker Man. That's worth checking out with Edward Woodward, The Equalizer, and Christopher Lee. Very cool. The Killing Fields, because genocide from
because
Indonesia
was... Because
Cambodia
is a fun happy... When you're done with assassinating people in Indonesia, swing over to Cambodia and the Killing Fields.
Stop on by.
And if that wasn't enough, the Criterion Collection has put out on Blu-ray Akira Kurosawa's Throne of Blood, which was basically a Japanese version of King Lear. And the hits just keep on coming. Also out on Blu-ray, Coal Miner's Daughter and Tequila Sunrise.
After you kill the king, you feel like killing him 10 minutes later.
Moving on, ladies and gentlemen, Abdul Kim Shabazz is here with me, and now I want to play with you, Sheriff, with you, an interview I did, don't say it, an interview I did last week with Fred the Hammer Williamson, who is working on a Kickstarter campaign to make a sequel to his 1996 action epic Original Gangstas, shot in Gary, Indiana. So here is...
And so were some of the actors.
Ladies and gentlemen, my chat with Fred the Hammer Williamson. Joining me on Film Sociology, well, let's see, actor, director, star, producer, writer, football rebel, cigar aficionado, and he was my very first professional film interview, so he's my good luck charm, but he's a good luck charm that could knock your teeth in, Fred the Hammer Williamson. How you doing, Hammer?
The Hammer is in the house.
And no admission for Hammer. He gets in. He gets in around the velvet rope.
If people know you and respect you, that's all that really counts, dude.
Exactly. Now, as I brought up, the first time I interviewed you was on the set of Original Gangsters in downtown Gary, and we've now come full circle because you want to make Original Gangsters 2. Tell us all about it.
Well, I think it's a film that needs to be made. You know, when I'm walking down the street and people remember all the films that I've done, but they seem to be latched onto this terminology as OG. So from doing Original Gangsters, I picked up another nickname, which is OG.
Mm-hmm.
So, okay, if the fans feel that way, then the picture should be made. But I've had tremendous difficulty trying to influence Hollywood that this is a picture that should be made, and it would be a successful picture because I'm bringing back all the same cast, and people want to see what their old heroes look like. They want to see what Jim Brown looks like, if he can still fight. Richard Roundtree still has that image of Bernie Casey, you know. It is as popular as it was before. We have Pam Grier. We have Antonio Fargas. We have Robert Forster. I want to do a film to give back the images that the people first saw them so that, you know, they can get back some credibility in their careers and maybe move forward in other projects in Hollywood. And we don't want them to be just forgotten, you know.
Absolutely. And it's interesting because in the last few years, there have been a number of action films. I won't name names, but they seem to have their own version of an all-star team. But you did this almost 20 years ago with Original Gangsters back in 96.
Well, it's ironic. As soon as I finished the film, I got a call from Stallone saying, was it working with all your old friends? And I said, listen, you pay them and everybody has a good time. So he came out with his... What, Indispensables or Dispendables or whatever it was? Okay. And now he's on Dispendable number 13, and I can't get number 2 off the ground, dude. So it's Hollywood really has made a lot of strides from days of yesteryear.
Well, and you're going via Kickstart, and as somebody who works in public radio, we know where pledge dollars really come in as far as support. Tell folks what they can do to become a part of Original Gangsters 2.
Well, we put the program on Kickstart. I think... The problem that we did is that we put it on too close to the holidays when people were short of money because we're not really burning up the wires and getting the money in. But I think it's because of the holidays. So maybe when it's over, it runs out mid-February. So if we haven't made the budget that we want by then, we'll pull it off and maybe give it another shot later on when people have more money and understand that the project is there and it needs to be funded.
So if people want to know more about the project and maybe want to kick in a few bucks, where can they go?
Well, they go to www.kickstarter, and it gives you all the information, and it tells you what you get. You know, we can't give them any proceeds, but we can, you know, do things to make them happy. We'll give them signed scripts from all the players. We give them photos, autographed pictures, personal autographed to them by all the players, so... You know, it's something that needs to be done, and I hope that we can get it done.
And ladies and gentlemen, this is better than the coffee mugs and tote bags that we have here, so go for it.
Well, this is original stuff, you know. This is a one-time original. And a script, you know, later on will be worth some money because, you know, I think the film will be popular, and we'll probably do another one. You know, this is old school number two. If it works out, we'll do old school three. We'll just old school on down the road, dude.
Exactly. Now, you wrote the script. Can you tell us a little bit? Can you give us a little tease on what OG2 is going to be about?
Well, I'm trying to keep everything current. You know, this one has a boxing background. Jim and Pam still live in Gary. They now run a boxing gym, and they have discovered a real jewel within their confines. And what happens is that the bad guys who run the casino on the ship, on the boat, the gambling boat, decide they want to buy the guy from Jim because they can do something for him that they feel Jim can't. Jim doesn't want to sell, so they try to muscle him and strong arm him, and that's when we come into play and says, okay, you guys want to play that way? We'll show you how to do that.
Because muscling Jim Brown wasn't a bad idea enough already.
No, but they didn't know that he was surrounded by Fred Williamson and Richard Roundtree and Bernie Casey. So we step up to the plate and said, you don't want to do that, guys.
Another example of experience over youth.
Putting a team together, you know, working together as a team, and it's a good opportunity for each guy to bring back the image that made him popular from the beginning.
And, yeah, watching the original Gangsters was so much fun. I always remember it opened the same weekend as Twister, and you made more money per capita on your film than I think that film did. There's not a whole lot of overhead, I assume, on your films.
Well, it shows you how stupid the majors are. I mean, how stupid can you be to open up a film that got so much publicity as Twister? Even though Twister was a bomb, it didn't do anything. But the publicity that they put out on Twister way outshined what we did. And we beat them in every way. We had per theater, more people coming to see the film. We beat them out in the first two or three weeks with no publicity, not equal to what they put out. So, you know, you can't fool the public. You got to give them what they like, and if they don't like it, they're not going to see it, no matter how much money you spend trying to make them come to the theater.
And you also had a heads up decades ago, because it's not just American money that comes into play. There's a lot of actors, and you're one, of course, that makes money globally. So there's more out there that, you know, you shouldn't be a xenophobe when it comes to money.
Well, I never bought into the idea that black films or films with have black stars don't make money in the foreign market. I never bought into that because 90% of my girlfriends were all from Spain or Germany or Italy. So trying to tell me they don't like me? Are you crazy? So in 1975, I made a film called Adios Amigo. I took three cans of film under my arm straight to Cannes. I went to Cannes in 1975. I went to the Carlton Terrace where everybody hangs out, and all the big celebrities and all the big producers and all the majors. And I gave the maitre d' $50 a day to save a table for me on the patio, so I could sit right in the middle of everybody and put my flyers down and put my poster down. I started with the T-shirt girls, with the wet T-shirt girls, walking around with Adios Amigo on the T-shirt.
Mm-hmm.
And I proved to myself, which I wasn't trying to prove to Hollywood, because Hollywood will consider that you're lucky. I didn't really care what Hollywood thought. I wanted to be sure that what I thought was right. And I walked away. I made the picture for $75,000. I came away with almost $500,000 in sales. So, you know, I broke that concept wide open. But Hollywood still don't buy into it because they think, you know, well, Hammer, you're different. You're lucky. Not lucky. You just got to understand what the people want to see.
Yeah, 35, 40 years, that's not a luck streak. That's just business.
It's understanding who your public is.
Mm-hmm.
Understanding who your public is, making a film that the public wants to see, that your fans want to see. You can't surprise them. They like you to see. They like you seeing you doing certain things all the time. I mean, they talk about Hollywood, so you're typecast. Yeah, I'm typecast, but I'm having fun. I like what I'm doing, so that means gainful employment. So I like what I'm doing. Why the heck should I change?
Well, and it's funny you mentioned that. When did you establish the Hammer rules?
When I first got into Hollywood, when I first came into Hollywood, I wanted to come in under the same image that I had left in pro football.
Uh-huh.
As the Hammer, you know, a guy who stands up for something and not afraid of what you believe in and not be afraid to speak up and talk. So when I came to Hollywood, I had called a press conference, and I said, I got three rules in Hollywood. I'm coming to be a hero, and my three rules are, you can't kill me in a movie. I have to win all my fights in a movie, and I get the girl at the end of the movie if I want it. Now, you do two out of three of those, and I'm working for you. It's not about money. You can't buy my integrity because my integrity is not for sale. I know who I am. I know what I represent to my public. I know what I represent to the black audience. So that's, you know, that's my longevity. That's why I haven't disappeared like a lot of actors have, black actors who made the so-called black exploitation movies back in the day. Their movies were all about get whitey. They were retribution movies. I killed black people, white people, yellow people, pink people. I killed everybody. If you were a bad guy, you went down. So trying to fit me into that black exploitation genre just never worked.
And I think your response to that was your checks cleared. What, who's being exploited?
Exactly. I mean, the audience were being happy when the smoke cleared. The black guy was still standing, you know. Not, you know, don't kill me and have Schwarzenegger avenge my death. Kill Schwarzenegger. Let me avenge his death. You know, don't kill me in the first 5 minutes of the movie and then talk about me throughout the rest of the movie. That I'm not going for that. I want the reversal of that.
Well, when I was a kid, my dad would take me, and you know, my dad wasn't putting his arm around me like Atticus Finch informing me that he was taking me to a black action movie. He took me to see Black Caesar. You know, it was no different than watching Burt Reynolds or Charles Bronson.
Exactly.
You just,
exactly.
You had flashier clothes. That was about it.
Yeah, well, my image of Black Caesar came from watching Edward G. Robinson in Little Caesar.
Right.
I wanted to be the guy that was questionable. Is he a good, bad guy? Or is he a bad, good guy? He kills people, but he only kills bad people. And he helps the little ladies across the street, and he gives flowers to people. So is he a bad guy, or is he a good guy? So as long as you keep that question, Clint Eastwood, Charles Bronson, are they good bad guys or bad, good guys? I mean, those are my heroes.
Yep. A little gray matter goes really well with a white suit.
It's the thought process that counts, dude.
Well, it's funny. You mentioned those rules. I came across an episode of Julia, and there were two of those rules. You won the court case, and you got Diane Carroll.
Well, I had a name called Steve Bruce, dude. I mean, it was a loser from the beginning. I had two first names, Steve Bruce. I'm going, I got to get out of this image as fast as I can. And I happened to be in a 20th Century Fox lot where we made the film, where we were shooting Julia. Guy walks up to me in the commissary and he says, I'm making a movie. I got a football scene in it. I don't really know that much about football. Would you direct the football stuff and put all the football players together and bring them in so we could have a believable football game? So, yeah, no problem. The movie was MASH.
Yep.
The guy that talked to me was Ingo Preminger.
Mm-hmm. And you helped out Altman with the football scenes. How hard did you tell the players to hit?
No, it was real. It was no fake out there. It was no exhibition game there. Because, you know, it was my credibility on the line. So, you know, let's hit people, let's take it out. You guys are all ex-football players. I got the only non-football players were Elliot Gould and
Donald Sutherland
and Tom Skerritt. The rest of the guys were semi-pros because at that time they had semi-pro teams in the Bay Area. And I brought all the semi-pro teams in. Plus, I sprinkled a few pros in there. I had Ben Davison in there. I had Jimmy Brown in there. So I sprinkled some pros in there to make sure we got some good hitting. So it was a realistic adventure.
When Original Gangsters 2 gets made, I should say when, not if, we need to get a 20th anniversary two-disc collection of the first one. We need more commentaries from you, Fred. You have some of the best DVD commentaries out there.
Yeah, you know, it helps sell the project. It alerts people to what it's about. It gives them an inside idea of what's going on while we make the film, and all that's fun. You know, as long as what you have to say is real. You know, there are things that you don't want to be known, but if you sprinkle a few of those into the commentary, it excites people. And as long as it's real and honest, they like it.
Speaking of real and honest, I am on your IMDb page. And there's some titles that are on your page, and I would like you to confirm or deny if these things are actually happening. Is that all right?
No problem.
Okay.
No problem.
There's a film that's in production called Life Outside.
Never heard of it.
Okay. Great. There's another one called it's in production, One Man's Vengeance.
Oh, yeah. That's my friend Jason. Jason Roth put that together.
And okay.
I think he's moved off. He's moved off of that onto Original Gangsters, but that was one idea that he was going to put together, that we were working together, but it was going to be a low-budget film. And I said, let's try Gangsters first. We can always go back to One Man's Vengeance because it's not as big a budget as Original Gangsters 2 is.
Okay, Sledge Johnson, that's good. All right, post-production, Beyond Control.
Never heard of it.
There's two. Another one in post-production, Billy Trigger.
Billy Trigger I made in Montreal, Canada. That's a good action film. It's like Black Caesar character that I played. That's going to be a good one.
Okay. Another one in post-production, Atomic Eden.
I made that in Germany. Hitler had an atomic weapon that he hid in one of his bunkers, and the bad guys are trying to get it, and I got to beat the bad guys to it before they get it, because they plan on doing damage with it. So I just want to know that the world is safe. I got it.
And you're not inglorious in this one.
Well, you know, I didn't want to go inglorious, because Quentin might try to copy that one too, you know.
Uh-huh. Well, we'll get to Quentin in just a second. And then there's something that's filming called Sticky Fingers, the movie.
That was something done a long time ago. Sticky Fingers is a dog. Yeah.
All right. So just, and then
the star of the movie stars a dog.
Oh, literally a dog.
Yeah.
Okay. And then there's two other titles that are in pre-production, but I think, you know, this conversation you and I are having are in pre-production, so I'm just going to let that slide. you know, out of curiosity, do you ever think the Charlie films will ever come out on DVD and Blu-ray or see the light of day?
I think they're afraid to, man. I mean, if they come out, and when they first made them, you know, in the East Coast, it was The Legend of Nigger Charlie, and then on the West Coast, it was The Legend of Charlie. Just like Boss Nigger.
Right.
Boss Nigger was okay in the East Coast, but when it came west, it was Boss.
Mm-hmm.
So now these films are Boss and Charlie. But you can't find Charlie, but you can find Boss. I don't understand that. Charlie just buried it.
Mm-hmm.
The only reason you find Boss is because I produced it and I put the distribution together. So it's a whole different ballgame, but Paramount's sitting on Charlie. I don't know what they'll probably never release it at all.
I wondered after Django Unchained came out, because I think those films were both heavily an influence on Django Unchained. I'm wondering if they would pop up out of nowhere, but apparently not happening.
Well, it's amazing that the New York Times did a big article about the film and about how close it was to Charlie. And how much that Quentin had taken from the movie. So it's not like people are not aware of the fact that the film was made and the film is out there, and they're not unaware of the fact that Quentin took a lot from it.
Hmm.
It took my wardrobe, first of all. It took my horse, my clothes, my gun, my hat, my cape. They took my whole wardrobe from Charlie and put it on Quentin's star.
Your character could have trained Jamie Foxx, but then again, you probably would have shoved Jamie Foxx out of the way and taken care of it yourself.
Yeah, well, you know, Jamie Foxx is a great actor and he's a good guy, but he's no hammer.
Nobody is. So you still doing the Comic-Cons? You doing the Gen Con type stuff?
Yeah. I mean, I'm doing them all over the world now. I got them in Germany. I'm in Berlin, Stitches, Barcelona. I'm everywhere.
We got to get you back in. When OG2 happens, will you film in Gary again?
Yeah, I'm going to start it in Gary, and I'll do the boxing stuff probably out here in California in one of the casinos. I'll use there's a big fight. My production value, the main production value of the film will be in a big arena with thousands of people watching. And what I'll do is shoot between a major fight. I'll shoot rounds anytime, you know, there's a break. I'll just run my players in there and shoot, and I already got that worked out.
Excellent. I will never forget the first time I met you. By the way, ladies and gentlemen, every Fred Williamson entrance is cinematic. I was parking on Main Street where you told me to park, and I get out, and I get it was like late at night, and I'm getting my microphone, getting my camera, getting my recorder, and I see somebody on the sidewalk, and of course my brain said no eye contact, and I looked up, and head to toe walking down, no entourage, head to toe in black, there you were, and you said hi, and I said I'm supposed to interview you, and you went, that's right, and you just said follow me, and walked right onto the set.
I'm not an entourage guy, man. You know, I don't need a whole bunch of people cheering for me and walking behind me. That's not my thing.
Doing our the annual show of dead people we like.
there's a pretty big one this week.
We don't have time for dead people we don't like.
Except Fred is still alive. Sorry, I don't think I was clear on my thing there. So that was my chat with.
Well, you know, when you do the Adobe, you're supposed to stop.
Yeah. or if you recorded in doubly, if you're a fan of Spinal Tap. That was Fred the Hammer Williamson. He's working on a Kickstart campaign for Original Gangsters 2, so you can go check out Kickstart. There's also a Kickstart Original Gangsters 2 page on Facebook as well as Twitter, so go check that out. Now, can we play the... You set up, we end one segment and move into another.
Gotcha.
So, like this.
Doing our the annual show of Dead People We Like.
there's a pretty big one this week.
We don't have time for dead people we don't like.
Yes.
Yeah, we do not have time for dead people we like. So, now of course, whenever I have Mr. Shabazz in studio, our cinematic brains start to gravitate toward stuff we grew up watching, and we'll get to that in a little bit. But I didn't get a chance to mention this on the show last week, but this was a guy. His name was Mike Vraney. And this was the founding member of Something Weird Home Video. Now, Something Weird Home Video was kind of all over the map and grabbed a lot of stuff that was maybe nobody quite knew who owned the rights. Not in the old Night of the Living Dead sense of the word, but there was like a lot of films that he was able to pick up on the cheap. A lot of C and D level movies from the 30s, 40s, and 50s.
Like drive-in type stuff?
Kind of drive-in stuff. Like, there's a lot of Bela Lugosi movies from the 40s. Not the 30s in his heyday, but those. There's a lot of the instructional movies that they would show us in school. You know, those things that was like Mystery Science Theater material.
Oh, things like Deadly Weapons.
Yeah, things like that. And then
Nude on the Moon.
Like health and safety scare films and, you know, yeah.
Shanti Tramp.
That's also playing in Gary. But yeah, the devil. He also had like the Devil Bat, which was the Bela Lugosi. Cannibal Island.
Actually, you know what? I have seen one of these movies.
Assassin of Youth.
No, okay. Basket Case.
Yes, Basket Case. There you go.
Yes.
You're on the page. You're on the site, aren't you?
Yeah.
now the other thing was, now if you go check out the Something Weird website, which I highly recommend, they also do a lot of old school nudie movies from the 60s. Like there's a lot of Chesty Morgan films and that sort of thing. So anyway, you know, thank you for picking up these weird,
that's
obscure things.
That's exploitation.
Instead of that's entertainment. Very good. So there is that. We have producer Saul Zanz, not John Fogerty's favorite guy, who he produced nine. This was a guy who was the head of Fantasy Records, and he produced 9 films. 3 won Best Picture.
Huh.
His first film out as a producer, One Flew Over the Cuckoo's Nest. Mm. Then he did a film called Three Warriors, the animated version of Lord of the Rings, the Ralph Bashke film from the late 70s, Amadeus, The Mosquito Coast, The Unbearable Lightness of Being, At Play in the Field of the Lord, The English Patient, and he ended with Gaia's Ghost. So 3 out of 9. Not bad.
Actually, Amadeus was on Sundance a couple days ago.
Fine, fine film featuring film sociology guest F. Murray Abraham.
Ah, oh, I thought you were talking about the guy from Animal House.
No, Tom Hulse, not on the show. Not
and yet. Parenthood.
Yes. Not F. Murray Abraham, Tom Hulse. And this was one, Abdul and I are old enough to remember this. Kobe is not. But on Saturdays, when Kung Fu movies reigned over Saturday independent television.
And you get such great award-winning films like The Five Deadly Venoms.
That's right. Well, Run Shaw, who was, I'm sorry.
It's like Run Rickshaw.
I know. he said it, not me. But this was a guy that helped... you know, produced a lot of was one of the founders of the Shaw Brothers studio and produced a lot of kung fu films. Lived to be 106.
Wow.
So
there's some kung fu fighting.
There is some kung fu living. But films like Madam Whitesnake, careful, The Lady General from the 60s, Five Fingers of Death, of course, one of the classics, Man of Iron, Shaolin Avengers, he produced, it was, I think, for Golden Harvest.
Did he do that one movie, The Golem?
I don't think so.
Huh.
But he also did The Big Boss, which was later called Fist of Fury with Bruce Lee. So, So a lot of kung fu TV.
By the way,
you
ever notice how those kung fu movies, there's always the big boss man who's in there somewhere, who's running the whole gambit.
Yes.
Who killed the teacher. And
oh, yeah, always a teacher killed.
Yeah, teacher gets killed. You know, guy goes away, almost kills somebody in a fight, says he will never fight again, goes back to his home village, the gangsters have taken over, and then there's like some white guy exploitation thing.
Yep.
It's basically, it was Chinese exploitation. films.
Yep. 36 Chamber of Shaolin, Bells of Death, Come Drink With Me, Mad Monkey Kung Fu, careful. My Young Auntie, Return to the 36 Chamber, and the Sublime, as the Onion refers to it, the Sublime Dirty H.O. Moving on.
Alrighty.
So thank you for all the Kung Fu films there. Okay, tomorrow on Svengoolie on MeTV, because we are pro Svengoolie here,
yes,
at Film Sociology.
You're very pro Rich Coast.
The Monolith Monsters. I don't think I've seen this one, and that's a big deal. So might look that up, Mr. Shabazz, with your fast fingers. I forgot to mention also on Blue DVD and Blu-ray this week from it's a film called Key of Life. And this is from the
Oh, by the way, you can watch the whole movie on YouTube in 77 minutes.
I need to work on that. I
and 25 seconds.
I think we might have to bring. I might have to do the film series of films that we watch entirely on YouTube. You know, and of course we don't encourage people to put movies on YouTube.
No.
But if they're up there already,
Mammoth Skyscrapers of Stone Thundering Across the Earth.
What are you reading text now?
No, the film poster.
Oh. Film Movement put out its new feature called Key of Life. And this is, as I've often said, foreign films are not really foreign films if they're universal stories. However, there's a couple of things that happen in this film that I'm really glad that they won't make a remake of this. It's about two guys who, one is an assassin, the other is a failed screenwriter and actor. He's very depressed, very suicidal, goes into a legitimate Japanese bathhouse and switches identity. The assassin slips on a bar of soap and knocks himself out. Now, in these, what I didn't know, and I don't expect your emails, that when you attend these bathhouses, you get a number put around your wrist. That's your locker number. So while the assassin is knocked out cold, he switches numbers because there are there are bathhouses in the States, but nobody's going to make movies about those, at least not at the multiplex.
They will if you're watching the movie Don John.
Maybe. So there's that switch. Plus, we have a businesswoman that wants to get married in a month's time. So anyway, charming little film. Really glad it's out there on Film Movement. That's worth checking out. Now, we're going to go into the archives. Kobe, this is where you get a film that you can only buy online through places like Warner Brothers or Sony or MGM, or as that dude down the hall likes to say.
Yeah, I'll burn it for like $5.
Okay. From 1959, a crime drama called The Purple Gang. And this is a film that starts off with a legitimate real-life politician, I doubt it, saying, you know, what a great film this is as far as exposing young youth crime in America. And this is a gang of up-and-coming mobsters, one of which played by a very young Robert Blake, who's now out still looking for the real killers. Oh, that's the other guy. Sorry. And, of course, all this is happening. There's a group of up-and-coming mobsters happening in my beloved city of Detroit. Which, guess what? Not filmed on location. not in the late 50s. So Barry Sullivan is the homicide cop and voiceover guy for this film. You know, this is a guy he's a homicide detective on the brink of quitting and moving to the country and being with his wife who's pregnant. But
unfortunately,
a crooked cop is killed. And, of course, if you kill a cop, even if he's crooked, it's a shot against the law.
Wow.
And against America. So
remember that next time I go see RoboCop.
Oh, you're not looking forward to the remake, are you?
No, I'm not.
No. And finally, anytime I can see a film that was mentioned in the Golden Turkey Award books written by Harry and Michael Medved, I like to do that. And I found this on the Fox Movie Channel last week from 1959, banner year for Film Sociology. This was a film that was nominated for Most Ridiculous Movie Monster, The Alligator People.
I think I've seen
this.
This
stars Beverly Garland, for you fans of My Three Sons. She is a newlywed whose husband goes missing. She goes searching for him down to a southern estate. And as we find out, it's not a southern estate. It's not a southern plantation.
It's made of people.
But it's a science lab where the doctor is creating these alligator mutant people. Lon Chaney Jr. is in it as well. Guess what? Yeah, did not win Most Ridiculous Movie Monster. That, of course, went to Robot Monster.
Wow.
The hairy, remember the bear outfit with the space helmet. So So there you go. See, lots of titles out there if you don't want to go see Osage County or Her or Lone Survivor. Abdul, plug your stuff. Where can people hear you or read you?
IndiePolitics.org. You can hear me down the street at our good friends on Monument Circle.
No, don't listen. Just go down the street. Put your ear up to the glass.
Watch me on Channel 6. Read me in the Annapolis Star and, you know, worship the ground I walk on, as one day you all will.
And we're the wind beneath your wings. All right, some words to live by.
Silent breed is people!
Zardoz has spoken.
You're listening to Film Sociology. See you later.